You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. This week it is Fanboy Versus Wildstorm as we close up the shop. I'm your host, JD.
Oh, that's the news, eh?
Joined today, yes, by Brian Kilby, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely. Welcome, gentlemen.
I knew there was some news, I just didn't know what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we might as well just go right there then.
Yep.
So Wildstorm. Bye bye.
What are they even
called? Not just Wildstorm, also what's it called? Zuda?
I've
never even
comic thing.
Well, it, I guess bye-bye is a strong term. Apparently, they're trying to streamline, I guess, the production. So they're supposedly folding all of that into the DC proper.
Yeah, but they're also laying people off.
Well, yeah.
Well, so yeah, it is. They're like, goodbye.
I mean, they're keeping the properties, but...
Yeah.
The core of this is that DC's doing a bit of a wide-scale reorganization. Their publishing division is still in New York, but the administrative and digital and multimedia is all moving to California. And as part of this reconstructuring and streamlining, Wildstorm and Zuda, if I could even remember what Zuda was, I would tell you, but I can't, are closing.
Well, and that was initially some of the thought that they were going to actually close up one of the shops. I mean, in particular, I thought there were some rumors that they were going to close up the New York offices and move everything to.
Not
to
likely.
But yeah, but apparently they're not going to do that. They're going to stay with publishing and everything in New York and then have both offices. But hey, you know, Wildstorm gets to go away. Not really. I mean, that's why I say not go away. They're. As far as the stories go, they're folding all that into...
Well, I don't want to be a jerk, but I was actually surprised to find that they were still publishing Wildstorm comics. I haven't bought one in forever.
No, I mean, yeah. This is a... I bear no particular ill will towards Wildstorm or anything, but this is a bit of a mercy killing at this point. Wildstorm as an imprint has been in trouble for a very long time. Its original properties sell nothing. It's been in trouble for as long as I've worked in comics retail. I remember when I came on and started working in comics in the shop, that was whenever they were trying to have their reboot of the Wildstorm universe. You had Grant Morrison on The Authority, and Garth Ennis was launching Midnighter. And I don't think Morrison made it past 2 issues of The Authority, literally. And it all just quietly fizzled away and disappeared. I think the only one that's managed to be published for any length of consistency is Gen 13, which has fallen to a bi-monthly schedule and some sort of apparent desperate gasp to justify its continued existence. I don't quite understand how that works, though. The thing subsists on video game adaptations and tie-ins at this point. It basically seems to have clung on to life just long enough to finish off Planetary and Ex Machina. It's two good series. And, you know, see you later. I can't imagine anybody's crying into their tea about this at this point.
No.
I really don't care.
No, it's relevant. You know, once we moved well into the new age of comics in the 21st century and all the last vestiges of any interest anybody had in anything born of the 90s quietly died out, Wildstorm's relevance just stopped.
I guess it brings sort of a question to me about the sort of state of DC. DC used to basically not have to turn a profit because it was an IP center for Warner Brothers. You know, they would come up with properties and Warner Brothers would make movies. So is there more scrutiny these days? I mean, obviously in the down economy, you would think so. But, I mean, Warner Brothers back in the day could have had 10 Wildstorms, you know, and none of them profitable, and things would have still been okay.
Well, the market is just shrinking, you know.
Yeah, and you know, and you've got a you know, again, I mean, you're talking about, yeah, I mean, they're trying to be competitive with Marvel as well, and DC hasn't been making as much, I don't think, off of their the other properties. I mean,
we had the sales figures for last month, not very long ago, and the sales figures for August are terrible. I think I read that the sales figures for August are the lowest comic sales figures have been since this information started to be made publicly available.
When was it made publicly available?
I do not know. I believe it was in the early part of this decade, or well, last decade now, whatever, you know.
Well, and, you know, like you said, the economy's down, people aren't buying as much. You know.
There's that. I mean, a lot of people pointing at the the $4 price point at this point.
I do hate that $4 price point.
Yeah, same here.
Well, and going back too, I mean, like I said, during the 80s and 90s, you know, DC had, and even up until the early 2000s, they had more films going, but they haven't.
Yeah,
Marvel's stomping them badly.
Yeah, I mean, Marvel is the one that's sitting there raking in the money off of profits.
I mean, obviously, none of them have touched Dark Knight, but that's an anomaly. That's because it was really good, and B, there's a lot of buzz because of Heath Ledger.
Yeah. And so that'll be, you know, again, so that'll be something to see once they do the next one. It'll also be, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Green Lantern. You know, whether or not that's going to be.
When is Green Lantern out?
I'll say May.
It's next May, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's May.
I know it's sometime in the next year, but you just, I don't know. It's just like, I know that Thor is out then. It's burned into my brain that Thor is out then, but yeah. Green Lantern.
Should be getting an early trailer. Should be getting a trailer with holidays.
Trailer for Thor at this point. Where's my Green Lantern teaser?
Yeah, honestly, by looking at what we've seen so far with Green Lantern, I think when the Thor trailer shows up, I'll be like, you know, yeehaw, look at that. I'm a comic fan. This is what I've been waiting for. But when the Green Lantern trailer shows up, I'll sort of duck under and sort of look around and pretend like I cover my little Fantastic Four t-shirt that I have on. So
you have no faith whatsoever in
none whatsoever. So if it's not awful, if it's not Catwoman, I will be impressed.
You know, that's harsh.
I'm sorry. It won't be that bad. It'll be better.
The one thing I'm looking forward to is the director is the same guy that directed Casino Royale. Loved me some Casino Royale.
And I don't see Green Lantern running around in Casino Royale either.
Yeah,
I just don't.
I know. But, you know,
it will obviously, well, I say obviously, it will hopefully be better than, you know, Jonah Hex. It'll be better than Catwoman.
It wouldn't be hard for it to be better.
But
than
I say,
as in they will spend money on it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I say it, even though I really liked it when it came out, I see it being more on the scale of the first Punisher movie, as far as quality goes.
Mm-hmm.
That seems fair. Yeah.
Because it wasn't bad. That was the first big Marvel movie after Spider-Man 1 came out.
You mean like the Thomas Jane?
The Thomas Jane Punisher. Yeah, remember, we watched it. We really liked it. But, you know,
yeah,
then, like, everything else coming after that was, like, freaking amazing.
And, you know, like, I can still watch that whenever it comes on.
It's not awful. It's not awful. It's not awful. It's just not great.
I mean, he kills a bunch of people, and his dad's Roy Scheider. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
God. So any other news from this week? It seemed like there was one other thing, but I can't remember what that was.
The next DC animated movie.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Which,
you know, yay.
Superman
movie.
I have a hard time looking. It's All-Star Superman. I have a hard time sort of rectifying that's All-Star Superman, because to me, All-Star Superman has the Frank Quietly look. But if I can get past,
there is no way they could have ever translated.
Yeah,
frankly.
Yeah, yeah. But if I can get past that, I will be just incredibly stoked.
I just want to see a super Lois, and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering. I mean, obviously they can't condense the whole series into one film. And to be honest, I thought the trailer had a rather dark tone, which seems a little bit at odds with the comic. It's not necessarily at odds with the base idea behind the story, it dying. But it, I don't know. I mean, it can't really pass comment. It was a trailer that showed very little, and I must admit, I'm looking at that trailer and I'm seeing, you know, this looks pretty finished. Why am I waiting until next fall to see this?
Yeah.
Because they want you to buy Apocalypse on Tuesday.
Of course, you know, when the movie actually comes out, you know, Superman may be blue and red. And
oh
Victor,
my God.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just never mind. I'm going to
for. I mean, what do we got next? We have the Superman Captain Marvel short before the end of this year.
Yeah, that's the collection, isn't it? That has like all the other shorts.
It's got the Green Arrow, Spectre, and Jonah Hex shorts from the last three DVDs, and then this new long short of Captain Marvel and Superman. And then I think is Emerald Warriors out before All Star, or is that the next one?
I didn't know they were making an Emerald Warrior.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah,
the next Green Lantern animated feature.
So are they staggering these between ones they expect to sell and ones they don't?
I know. After that is Batman Year One.
Ooh, I was actually thinking about this for the last couple of days.
Actually, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Apparently, All Star Superman's actually out in February of next year.
There's so many of these DC Green comics that I.
On Year One.
There's so many of these DC stories that I love that I don't necessarily need to see translated into film. I love Year One. You know, I love All-Star Superman. I don't need to see them. It'll be nice seeing them, but I kind of wish that DC would go ahead and sort of focus on making new stories, because so far the new stories have been better.
The best movies are the original stories.
Yeah.
First Flight, Wonder Woman, and Crisis on Two Earths.
Well, I don't know about First Flight, but I'll give you one of those. I would trade that with, say, like New Frontier, which is not a new story, but that's me.
I'd just like to see one that isn't Batman or Superman.
Yeah,
give me a Flash movie.
I mean, because that would.
Oh God, yeah! Give me a Flash movie.
You
that could be awesome.
Are they not working on one?
Not currently. The current ones that are known for certain that are upcoming are All-Star Superman, Green Lantern, Emerald Knights, which is an anthology series of shorts about various lanterns rather than any kind of big thing, and Year One. So, yeah, go back and make the Judas contract or something. I just want something that's not Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, how does this break down? Superman, Doomsday, one Superman, one just anyone. I'm counting 1 second. Batman. Two. We've had two Justice League movies, two Batman and Superman movies, two Superman movies, and three Batman movies. And we will have had two Green Lantern movies.
But they're doing the Batman Superman stuff because that's what sells. I mean, because the Green Lantern, it's so bad.
And yet they're the most inferior of all the films.
I would agree.
The Batman Superman films are the most inferior.
In Gotham, you have Gotham Knights, which is the worst.
I don't know. I like Gotham Knights.
Gotham Knights is the worst. And,
I heard that was really bad. I didn't see it.
And Superman Doomsday is not bad, but it's just not. It's not just.
It's kind of lame.
It's not strong.
Something had to be first, and I'm kind of glad that was what was first, so that the other movies didn't get kind of damaged. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll get to reviews. I'm going to go first because I only have two things, and they're both DC, and apparently no one else read them. So that way I'll get myself out of the way.
You didn't read Flash?
I did read Flash, but we're going to do that at the end.
That makes sense.
So that I will be able to come back and have something to talk about.
Okay.
but there may be some discussion off of this. So anyway, real quick, I'm just going to mention Jen Lost. Which is not terribly interesting, really. For some reason, Magog and his troops are fighting Parasite, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, and Max Lord becomes his White Lantern guy again, which apparently he's got him the lance. There were in Max's vision, he's killing Magog, or that's his name, isn't it?
Yeah,
right. Right. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
He's killing him with this lance thing, and that shows up in this story. So I don't know if that's going to loop around or what. But most of this issue was just people standing around talking. Not terribly a lot interesting happened, although there was sort of a cameo between Batman and Power Girl, in which they seemed for a moment to have an inkling that maybe this Max Lord guy might be real and something was going on with that. And just about the time they go to search for him, they forget about him.
I really liked that scene.
Which was, I mean, it was great and kind of weird because it was like, I mean, it had a point, obviously, because it's making it clear that this mind wipe, this forgetting about him, is an ongoing issue, but it's not perfect because, you know, people will get that impression and then it will, you know, it'll basically have to be reimplanted.
And also, but, yeah. If any character is going to be the one to start to suspect something, it's going to be Batman.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. But then even he's going to forget. So, and then they break into somewhere and lo and behold, hey, it's the Metal Men because they've got nothing to do. So, anyway.
They got out of patrol.
Wasn't my favorite issue of the Gen Law series, but it wasn't bad either. So, now, on to more exciting things. This was the conclusion of the current storyline going through, which was the Revolt of the Alpha Lanterns that was going through Green Lantern Corps, which was the other thing I read this week. Basically, most of the issue, of course, Cyborg Superman had been trying to get Ganthet to figure out how to break the connection with the power batteries for the Alpha Lanterns, essentially to be able to separate their consciousness or something. Basically, because, you know, Cyborg Superman is crazy and trying to die. Ganthet is sort of successful in this endeavor right about the time that the other Green Lanterns finally get the lame-ass inhabitants of this robot planet to finally revolt and try to fight Cyborg Superman. And if you ever thought that Hank Henshaw wasn't kind of awesome, man, he managed to mind control every citizen of the planet and turn them into, like, enormous conglomerate gestalt arm things in order to kill themselves. It was pretty spectacular. The sort of big thing out of this, though, is that basically it's a showdown between Ganthet and the other Green Lanterns and Cyborg Superman, and they basically completely destroy the Cyborg Superman body.
You can't completely destroy him. He always comes back.
You can destroy the Cyborg Superman body, but you can't destroy Hank Henshaw, right? Because he is sort of a disembodied consciousness. Now, he transfers his consciousness into the body and battery of... what's her name? Boudica.
Yeah. Boudica, then, whatever you want to say.
When he sort of regains his composure, he's in basically Hank Henshaw human form. But he's in this sort of sort of like a rocky, you know, mountainous sort of environment where a humanoid, not Alpha Lantern version of Boudica, begins to kick his ass and then cut him in half and supposedly kill him. So it's probably a tease for later because they basically end up restoring the Alpha Lanterns and everybody lives happily ever after. But I'm sort of interested to see what they're going to do, you know, with the Cyborg Superman line. I wonder if they've split him off and now they're going to try and do something different with Hank Henshaw to separate him from the Cyborg Superman to sort of close that off, because it looks like, I mean, again, when Cyborg Superman has died before, there were sort of bits of him left, and the consciousness, the Hank Henshaw consciousness, was still in that body. So, like, when they brought him back the last time, there were still bits of him to bring back.
I hate to be cynical, but it's comic. I mean, I just expect him to come back, because Cyborg Superman's kind of cool, and I would hate to see them get rid of him forever.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, and that's what I mean. Yeah, sure, they can retcon it out later and do something else with it, but it would seem to be that the intention here is to kill off the Cyborg Superman piece and maybe bring the Henshaw back into play in a different way, you know, later, maybe a Cyborg Green Lantern or something. but
that would be lame. Really, really
lame.
It
would be lame. It would not be as cool as Cyborg Superman.
Cyborg Superman's pretty awesome. I mean, that's one of the only cool... I mean, you know, that's like the only cool thing left from the Return of Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't... Except for Connor, but I don't even think of...
Exactly.
But
well,
Connor's changed so much that he's virtually not the same character.
Yeah.
I talk about a character who was definitely born in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back at... Yeah.
Is it, you know, that's funny is that I really think you can take that that Superboy model and put it right next to the current Wonder Woman, and I don't know that you could tell that those characters are like 15 years apart.
They're siblings.
I smell team up in like the next issue of Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god.
It might explain some things.
Yeah.
Retro Connor and current Wonder Woman, that would be, oh my god. So... I don't know. I mean, I wasn't real excited about the, you know, the Alpha Lantern things because I really don't care about the Alpha Lanterns.
I actually actively dislike the Alpha Lanterns. I don't like their concept.
Well, and they're gone now. I mean, the Alpha Lanterns, essentially they took all the Alpha Lanterns and basically this closes the loop on that. They're not going to make any more Alpha Lanterns and
did
the
they
Alpha
cure
Lanterns,
them? Did they remove
yes.
them? Yes. Oh, so are they human or whatever they were before?
They're not human. They're still cyborgs because they can't reverse that. But they do have their individual consciousnesses back. So they're not like
Manhunter talk now. They're like they talk like normal people.
Yeah, they talk like normal Lantern. I mean, essentially, they are normal Lanterns, other than the fact that they now have their cybernetic bodies, and I think they still have their batteries, but they're not.
Well, you know, there could be some interest and stuff with that. I mean, they got their minds back, and they're not. Whole anymore. I mean, some of them might be like crazy now, and some of them might become villains or something. You could maybe do something interesting with that.
Yeah, I mean, because some of the Alpha Lanterns are left for ones that were converted by Cyborg Superman, so they're not the, you know, they're not like the ones that were the chosen ones or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. I think this will kind of go away. I mean, I think it's a way to kind of brush it under the rug. And try to move on from that whole bit of the storyline. So, I don't know. Again, this is still holding the Brightest Day title, and I don't know why. None of what happened in this issue really would seem to tie into Brightest Day. But I'll stop complaining about that, apparently.
Because it didn't have any Brightest Day characters in it either, did it?
Nope. None. Yeah. I mean, other than just being the fact that it is a Green Lantern title, and the Green Lanterns are tied to the events of Brightest Day, but... I don't know. Anyway, so apparently Cyborg Superman dead. We'll see how long that lasts. So, anyway. Brian.
I read stuff. Not a whole lot of stuff, but I read stuff.
Tell us what stuff you read, Brian.
I think actually everything I've read is stuff that you guys have read. So I'm going to just take... How many books did you actually read this week, McFeely?
I read... 10 books this week.
Okay, I'm going to take every single thing that I read.
Yeah,
feel
free.
So I read, this is the first issue of Matt Fraction's Thor, is it not?
Yeah, it is!
Yes, it is.
I liked it. I thought that he does I thought the way that he handles the interactions with the characters was really, I liked his dialogue. I liked his characterization of Thor. I didn't know that Thor and Donald Blake were kind of semi-antagonists like they are, which because I haven't read the book since Dan Jurgens left it. So I'm a little bit behind on Thor. But
well, he seems to be playing that up a little bit more than Straczynski did.
They are
separate entities here, as they were.
Yeah, I don't remember them like actively hating each other during the Straczynski stuff. I just remember them kind of like having conversations and maybe disagreeing.
Yeah,
and this is like I eat you. Yeah, I know.
Actually, over the last week, I actually read Stephen Hawking's new book. So the whole point of
so you had like a sense of deja vu.
Yeah, because I was actually talking to Triplett about it, about M theory and everything that Hawking's book goes into, and this. It's actually kind of it's eerily similar. It's like Fraction had a preview of. I mean, obviously, he didn't present anything new in the book. I mean, it's stuff you could go out on Wikipedia and read. But it's just interesting that this the whole gist of Hawking's book is basically reiterated in the first issue of Matt Fraction's Thor. I mean, I really don't have a lot of detail to go into because it was basically Thor trying to reconcile. Part of it was Thor trying to reconcile the death of Loki, and he I miss my brother. You know, I mean, you know, he remembers back to when he was a child, to when he and Loki didn't hate each other. But it was good. It makes me interested in reading the next issue. It wasn't like as revelatory to me as like reading Hickman's Fantastic Four for the first time, which, you know, the first issue of that was just absolutely brilliant. This was just really good. It was really solid. Not so much happened in it that, you know, it's like, oh God, I have to read the next issue. I was absolutely, positively was not turned off by it. So
the framing sequence is probably the most important thing we should, you know, just tell the readers about, listeners. It involves a human scientist talking with Asgard's greatest man of science, who is perennially off panel until the final page, trying to make him understand about the structure of the multiverse and the fact that since Asgard is now on Earth, what is where Asgard was and what will come to fill it.
Yeah.
And in the course of the issue, we see what has come to fill Asgard. Now, this is flying. Like what was happening in... like what Gillen was doing with Hel and Hela in his brief run, this is also massively flying in the face of what Bendis is doing over in Avengers Prime, which has stuff still being there and Hela trying to co-opt it to make a new Hel out of. But I just don't care because this is so much better.
Yeah, I mean, not being a huge Bendis fan or a fan of his current Avengers work, I would agree.
Prime is quite good, but it was just that came out first.
Yeah.
And then we've had this story after that because that's bi-monthly. So we've had about 3 or 4 issues of Thor since that came out, which have completely contradicted it. But I want to bring special attention actually to the art in this issue.
Oh, the art was great.
I mean, these are by Pascal Ferry, who I have been a fan of since his work with John Ostrander on Heroes for Hire in the late 90s. I wasn't in love with him back then, but that's because it was coming out of the 90s and art style. It was, you know, art styles were changing back then out of one style that everybody copied into people trying to do their own things again. And I've come to really enjoy his work now, and I really enjoy him in this. But you know, an extra, extra special nod has got to go to the colorist on this issue, who does some gorgeous work.
Yeah, that stuff with the I guess are they the elves or whatever it is, where it's all blue and everything. Yeah. That's awesome looking.
Oh, it's so
it's gorgeous, gorgeous. Yeah,
it's in shades of blue and a little green and purple here and there. It is. You wouldn't think you could do that much with one color, but it is stonkingly good stuff.
And then you get that page in the middle where those guys show up and start slaughtering, and there's like this explosion of color. It's awesome.
That's it. It's like it's just a great bit of color theory where it's like all this bold blood red bursts into a sterile world of blue. Like, it's brilliant stuff. And you know, I gotta go one step further and even big up the lettering, because this is lettering by the majestic John Workman, who lettered Simonson's run. There is
really
all the elements of fantastic Thor at work here, as well as a great last page gag when you find out who the man of science is.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it, but
as long as it is.
I laughed. I literally laughed out loud reading that.
I had figured it out, but I still laughed anyway.
Well, I was going through. It's like, who hasn't shown up in the issue yet? That's how I did it. I'm like, oh yes.
They got Hogan, they got Fandral, they got Balder, they got Sif, they got Thor. Loki's dead. Who does that leave?
I didn't even consider that the book was lettered by anything other than a computer. Shame on me for that. I
recognized it as soon as I saw it, just because I've read some Simonson Thor recently, and it's like, holy shit, they are really pulling out the stops for this. They know what they want to make with this. But that's always a little dangerous, because you don't want to be trying too hard to emulate something like that. They're obviously trying to evoke a particular period in Thor with a decision like that, and given this has been delayed a little while, the enthusiasm for it has built even more, whereas Gillen, I feel, did an excellent job in matching the sort of mythological tone and the idea of bringing myth to the fore of the stories in his filler arc that Simonson did. And I'm not prematurely condemning this or anything. It may well live up to that yet, but
I think it would be impossible to, when was the last time we had a long run on Thor, like a really long run on Thor? Yeah, and that wasn't Simonson, by any stretch.
No, that was a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, that was so sure. The book may achieve like some of the greatness that it did under the Simonson, but. I mean, how long do you expect Hickman to be on it? A year, maybe?
Fraction.
I mean, Fraction. Sorry. How long do you expect Fraction to be on it?
For longer than a year, to be honest.
I'm already jumping ahead to my next book, which is... read if the first issue of the storyline 3 in Fantastic Four. I really liked it. It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite issue so far that Hickman's done, but it has my favorite panel of any comic in like the last 2 or 3 years. So the gist of the story is that Valeria, are they in the sub? More, they're not in the microverse.
Fighting over in the
neutral zone.
Yeah.
So while the FF are in the neutral zone,
that's not any kind of weird dimension. That's actually just a place on Earth.
Gotcha. See, I didn't know that.
It's over by the city of the High Evolutionary, one of the four cities that.
I got you now. Got you. Okay, that puts it that clarifies it for me. So Valeria basically pretends that she's sleeping. She goes and she circumvents Reed's security systems to get to Reed's lab, and she goes through Reed's logs, and learns about the council and the fact that Reed gave up happiness for universal peace and harmony. And we don't exactly know where everything's going, what her thoughts are, but she says that she believes that he's made a mistake, so she goes to the only person that who's really Reed's peer in the whole Marvel universe, and that's Doom. Now, of course, when Valeria was first introduced, the older version of her, she was thought to be Doom's daughter, you know. Of course, Doom actually was Reed Richards at that point.
And they even called her Valerie von Doom, didn't they?
Yeah, she was Valerie von Doom.
It was a little complicated. It was introduced during Chris Claremont's run, and she came from the future and came to be the child of Doom and Susan Richards. And then a little later into the run, about 25 issues into the run, they started to hint that maybe it wasn't Doom, but it was Reed in Doom's armor, because Reed became trapped in Doom's armor in the present day. But then it all got branched. Then Jeff Loeb came in and shot all over it, basically. Yeah.
I can't really recall any like interaction between Doom and Valeria post that.
I think they literally only met for about 2 issues.
So Valeria makes her presence known in Latveria. Doom is actually about to abdicate and go off to find a cure or improve himself or get better healed for something we don't know what's wrong with at that point.
No. Did this happen in that Doom War or something? I mean, is this something that happened?
I don't know.
Because that I didn't know what was going
War
on.
War of the Hulks? Okay.
War of the Hulks.
Gotcha. Okay. So apparently Doom is injured. He suffers brain damage in the War of the Hulks.
Other most intelligent. It's mentioned in the recap page. Dr. Doom has lost his great intellect, a casualty of the battle with the Intelligentsia, which is a cabal of the other smartest men in the Marvel Universe who have been bedeviling the Hulk recently.
So Valeria
Doom
just
turned down when they tried to recruit him years ago, and they didn't take well to that.
So Valeria just materializes in Doom's chamber, and Doom is like, "Hey, so you shouldn't be here." So it's like he's not shocked at all that Valeria is able to string together coherent sentences. You know, she's what, 2, 3 at this point?
She was three or four, something like that.
But she says that, you know, that she discovered Reed's lab and that she had gone through this. And she thought, well, what would Uncle Doom do? Which I thought was great. But she presents the issue and says she wants Doom's help. Doom, you know, says, you know, he's hesitant. She notes that because of his delayed reaction and his, like, a twitch in his eye or some such, that is like, you've had brain damage. She's like, I'll cure you if you'll help me. And my favorite panel, I think, of anything ever is Valeria and Doom shaking hands.
That is a great
I just, it's like, oh, that's so awesome. I want a poster of that. So, because I love Valeria. I loved Valeria when they first introduced her. I thought she was awesome. And the fact that I worried that we're just going to get another Franklin from Valeria. That was honestly my fear, because she had such great potential. And, you know, Hickman's actually making her live up to it, which is fantastic. But
She's more sinister in this. There's yes. more of Claremont's morally questionable Valeria in this than in anything we've seen of the character. Admittedly, I mean, she's only been intelligent enough to form sentences since about halfway through the Miller run. So, you know, there hasn't been a lot of time for it to happen. But it is like, oh my God, you bitch. Do you know what to give up for your...
Well, I'm not going that far because, I she's smarter than all of this put together, yeah, obviously. So, you know, she knows what she's doing, that four-year-old. She does. So I figure if... I don't think that Doom's in the position to double cross her, and I think Doom's actually
the smarts to do.
And I think,
even though he doesn't have his intelligence, he still has his demeanor.
Yeah,
and that's a wonderful thing because it's Doom, but not quite.
And Doom, I would consider Doom honorable, at least to an extent. Yeah. So I think if he makes an agreement with Valeria, he's going to honor it. But if anyone's doing any double-crossing of this, it's going to be Valeria double-crossing Doom. Mm-hmm. And I'm just waiting for it. So so it's beautiful. But no, so this is the first part of the three-story arc. So at the end of this, someone's going to die. And it's one of the we're assuming that it's one of the core four members of the FF. So... you know, who knows who it'll be. I don't really want them to kill off a character because the last time they did it, it really freaking sucked.
Yeah,
but you know, it wasn't Hickman doing it, so who knows?
See, that's just that I have faith in him to do it right. Yeah. I mean, this is maybe putting a little bit of truth into that theory I had last issue, which is like this is all of the bits that we've seen from the very start of his run coming together. We've got the bridge, we've got the alternate Reeds, we've got Reed's plan to fix everything, we've got the four cities coming together, they'll be working into the thing becoming human thing very soon, we've got the prophecy for the future that Valeria was told by future Franklin, and then at the end of the issue as well, we have this scene with the Silver Surfer.
Yeah, yes, and Galactus.
Finding the dead Galactus that all of the other Reeds killed and buried in the first story arc.
Yeah. So, unacceptable.
Unacceptable, it's yeah.
Unacceptable.
I know, that's like, it fills you with dread.
So, yeah, I enjoyed this like every other Hickman issue. Not the best issue, but one of my favorite points or occurrences in recent issues or recent memory of anything. So
it's not a great jumping on point.
No. If you haven't read,
which is slightly disappointing because they've kind of been pimping it as one. There have been all the house ads for it, and they've been talking about this a lot. Obviously, with the hope of getting more people to pick it up.
It sold really well, so a lot of people jumped on.
It is a good jumping on point. It's not, but you're doing yourself a disservice by not going back and reading the last year.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here you're flat out not going to get.
I try to put myself in the frame of like a 13-year-old kid who's finding the comic. Obviously, this
isn't
happening anymore.
That's disgusting, Brian.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I try to put myself in the mindset of a 13-year-old kid. The 13-year-old kid that I was, that would happen to find a comic at the supermarket, and you know, seeing if, well, could I jump on here? And you know, there are things that there's schema that you would be missing, but I think that there's enough that you can actually. Get enough in context that, you know, it's awesome. Read it. If you haven't read Fantastic Four, jump on here. Do it.
This is the first issue by Steve Epting as well, and it looks better than anything that we've had since the Daily Motion list.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Again, yeah. I want a poster of that shot. I will probably get a copy and print one out and get and frame it. It's beautiful.
Cool.
That in the other book that I read is Flash, and we'll get to that at the end.
Okay. All right. Very good. McFeely.
No, Triplett should go.
Wait, because I don't have as many books as McFeely. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Fair enough, then.
I need to further if you go.
I have been vetoed.
You guys have already covered some of my books. You covered Thor and Fantastic Four. We'll save Flash to the end, so I guess I will do Ultimate Spider-Man 14, and if you guys don't care, I will talk about Avengers.
Okay.
Go for it.
So, let me hit Ultimate Spider-Man first. Did anybody read 14 yet, or...?
Surely did.
You didn't read it, Brian.
I never got around to it, but go ahead.
We'll dodge the spoilers. But, yeah.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried. Go ahead.
Well, we'll dodge them anyway.
Okay.
Well, I mean, what is there to... The last page, maybe. That's about it.
That's all I'm talking about, really.
Yeah. I mean, well, one thing is, I don't know, I was kind of like feeling like, and I do this a lot. Whenever I read Ultimate Spider-Man, I always feel like I'm missing an issue. And why is that? I don't get it. Because, in the previous issues, the Chameleon, he's like taking, Peter Parker's identity, and he knows he's Spider-Man. And so he has the costume, and he's like using that to his advantage to, rob people, make some money. But then they introduce—I don't know if they introduced this character or not—but so there's like a second Chameleon.
Yes,
it's your sister.
Was she in the last issue?
Yes,
yeah. I don't remember.
She's
last issue.
Yeah, she was in there.
Was she like at the very end or something? Maybe like the last page or something. Huh?
She shot Jonah Jameson in the last issue.
Yeah, she was the one that shot Jameson.
I must have read through it pretty quick because I don't even remember her. I was like, good Lord, there's two.
I remember that. You know? And I didn't read it.
this issue's creepy as hell. I mean, good Lord. I mean, we've already had like issues of Ultimate Spider-Man where, we've got basically like a female version of Peter Parker running around as Spider-Woman. Well, this issue, it goes even further. We have, the Chameleon's sister, taking the facial shape of Peter Parker with a woman's body. What in the hell is Bendis trying to tell us? I mean, I don't get this.
Somewhere, Slash girls are crying.
Yes.
I mean, but still, I mean, it was a good issue. It was pretty good. I mean, it was the conclusion of the whole Chameleon thing. Bobby and Johnny, figure out something's going on, and they figure out, oh, that's not Peter Parker, that's not Spider-Man, and, other than that, I mean, I don't know what else really to say about the issue. It's just, Ultimate Spider-Man-y stuff. I don't really want to spoil the ending to it.
It's just a bit of a big action spectacle as he, there's that really gratifying panel where he finally punches the Chameleon really hard in the face.
There's not much of a story. I mean, like you said, it's mostly just action.
It ends the way you basically expect it to end. It's
basically
three pages where the interesting stuff happens, where Gwen Stacy shoots him this really horrible look. And I was just about this with a customer, and it's like, what, bitch? It wasn't even him. What are you looking at? If you're going to be all pissy about this next issue and it's going to turn into a thing, you can fuck off because it wasn't him.
And like we were saying, we're not going to spoil the ending, but dude, the ending makes me really want to read the next issue, see where that goes.
What I will say about the ending, without telling what it is that at first blush, like just at the first reading, the first emotion that I had was, oh, maybe they don't have as much balls as I thought after all then. But it's the Ultimate Universe, you should totally be able to have the balls to do that.
Whatever you want.
But then on the second thought was, oh, but not doing it has so much more story potential.
Yeah.
There will be better stories told as a result of it ending this way than there would be with the more daring and unusual and controversial ending. And that's all I can really say about that, without spoiling it.
Without...
I mean, it's more Ultimate Spider-Man. It's, still good. That's that.
Sorry, I'm here smelling Play-Doh because it smells like Kevin.
Okay.
There it is. Sorry. I love the smell of Play-Doh.
But Avengers, going on to Avengers number 5, would I be wrong to say that Avengers, the Avengers book, not Secret Avengers, not New Avengers, is kind of hitting its stride now with this issue? Did anybody else read it?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, still think it's not the best of the three books.
No, it's not the best of the three, but like of all the confusing stuff and all the just like why are we doing it and nothing happening in the last issues, something happens in this issue. Yeah. There's some cool stuff that happens in this issue, I thought.
And it also seems to validate the amount of time wasted in the third issue because now they had to travel back to the midst of that and use it to their advantage.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that. I mean, we got Thor saying, have at thee to Galactus.
Yeah. He just beamed Galactus right in the head. It was awesome. In a lovely big double page John Romita Jr. spread too, so you know, price of admission.
Very awesome. We got, the explanation of, why old future Tony is, attacking or doing something to young Tony, and we find out that it's because he's afraid that that Ultron could somehow, use Tony Stark's armor to, sneak in, I guess, find a back door or something. And
that's two issues in a row now where the cliffhanger has been, the future version of you is a douchebag, and then the resolution has been, oh, wait, no, he's not.
Yeah, and we find out that, obviously Kane is working some sort of an angle that they're not. It appears that the future versions, the future Avengers, aren't really bad guys. That they just needed the President of Avengers help. That when they sent him back, that they didn't send him back to say, the Avengers are going to kill Kane's future self or something. No, they just need their help, and Kane was the only guy that could do it because the future Avengers, they're stuck there. They can't travel through time. They can't go back, but because Kane, I guess, is this master of time, he's not stuck, so they can send him back for to get other people. And in the line, it's like it's kind of like there was that movie that came out 100 years ago. A man who was forced to live the same day over and over again. What was it called? And Tony Stark says, "Groundhog Day." Yeah, that's us. We're trapped here.
Yeah, old Tony's gone a little bit Rip Hunter.
But I think what I like best about the book, about this issue, is when basically old Tony is telling younger Tony that they think they've mapped out where everything went wrong and what leads to this Ultron war, this chaos that's going outside that's destroying everything, and also I guess screwing up reality for the Avengers that stayed behind. And then we get this big map. I guess it is, or it's kind of like a timeline that he's drawn out.
That's what I'm talking about when I said he's gone Rip Hunter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to see events that have already happened, and then we get to see things that haven't happened yet. And there's even something referenced on this that was in that issue of Fantastic Four we were just talking about, where it says all hope lies in doom.
There's a big screw, just three there and nine worlds in disarray in reference to what's going on to Thor.
Just all yesterday's X-Men. Steve
Academy traitor.
Yeah, five lights.
Iron Man returns. So he's gone completely worthy. Rip Hunter.
Yeah, that is so Rip Hunter. Oh my god.
Rip Hunter.
It's so cool, and I like this because I want to see. It actually makes me interested in Marvel Comics to see how much of this shit's going to pan out. Much of this
just there in the bottom right, the three skull ion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that means Triskelion, which is the Avengers base in the Ultimate Universe.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even notice that. That's just one I've plucked out of all of the other things that are. Maybe that's the most oblique one. A lot of these things are pretty much like, well, we can basically just wait for Captain America to have a vision here, then, I guess. Or we can wait for Iron Lad to return.
And there's one that says, "Where is Wanda?" So I wonder if that means that they don't know whether or not Young Avengers Children's Crusade will be done by then. So maybe that's why it says, "Where is Wanda?"
Yeah. That end point 60 years from now is when it will finally be finished.
Yeah. But it's cool. I mean, just stuff like that, just so interesting. And like you were mentioning earlier, because time's so screwed up, and it's like things are it's like time is like breaking and everything's changing constantly. So they get bumped back to the events of like what was it, like two or three issues back?
Three, I think.
Three issues when Apocalypse was attacking them with the four horsemen. Except for, you know, now they've already experienced it. And they're just kind of, you know, the ones that traveled into the future already experienced it, and now they're knowing that, oh, we're going to win. We just got to, you know, survive long enough for them to, you know, disappear. And they're just trying to figure out what in the hell's going on and what they need to do next.
Yeah, so, and, I mean, it adds a little bit of – I mean, we were complaining big time about that issue because it did was squandering an issue, but it's got a little retroactive relevance now.
Yeah.
In that it provides this, the fodder for this to actually happen. Now, it doesn't excuse that wasted second issue where Wonder Man attacked for 5 seconds and then flew away.
Well, maybe yeah, we're going to find out a reason for that. Maybe they're going to travel back again.
Yeah.
But
So is what you're saying that I did not buy this and did not read this at the point at which it would have been interesting to do
what
so?
What I'm saying is you're a jinx, JD. And whenever you buy the book, the book's not good. So
keep away so from it. Like,
I shouldn't buy the book so that you guys can read it and it can be good.
Yeah. Oh, and something I glossed over, the thing with Captain Marvel, they didn't know who he was. You know, the guys in the future Avengers. So what's up with that? I mean, are they kind of insinuating that maybe he's responsible? That maybe he's the guy that's caused all the problems?
I think maybe the implication was, and it's always hard to tell with time travel, but I think maybe the implication was that the moment that things diverged, the moment before, is before Captain Marvel.
Okay.
That maybe time, that's when time broke, so that's why he's not there in the future, because the Avengers present that we've been seeing in the first couple of issues, this is not necessarily part of the future past. Oh blimey, I've gone cross-eyed.
And then we get like I'm not going to spoil the ending, but at the end of the book, they, you know, it looks like they reconstruct, you know, the device they use to travel through time again, and they go to visit someone. And I'm not going to spoil who it is that they go to visit, but yeah, read the book. This was a good issue. I mean, I really enjoyed this issue. This is the Avengers book that I've been wanting, and I hope that issue 6 just keeps it going.
It seems that Bendis always trots this out whenever he's trying to tell a traditional Avengers story. Without saying who and what all happens on the last page, this seems to be the way Bendis takes a story when he wants to do traditional. Whether or not it'll pan out, we'll have to see, because it didn't work the last time.
Right.
But fingers crossed.
But it was cool. I liked it. And that's it for me, because we covered everything else except for Flash.
All right. Well, there you go, McFeely.
Well, then, I'm down to two here. So that went well. Secret Avengers. Secret Avengers. Now, this was interesting, because we were talking last time about how just Secret Avengers just really doesn't seem to have lived up to its potential. And about
it kind of had a good start, I thought, with like the first issue got me interested, and then it just kind of nothing's happening for like a couple of issues.
I thought about it a little more. I was thinking about it this morning, and it really occurred to me that I think the problem with that story was that it could have been anybody. The characters were incidental to the actual events. As long as you had somebody who could fly into space and get possessed by the clown on Mars, the things that the characters showed up and did could really have been done by any set of superheroes. Moon Knight certainly isn't well suited to Mars.
No.
The Beast doesn't really get his best on Mars. It was a strange choice for a first story to pull so many of the characters out of a scenario, out of any kind of setting that suits them. I mean, this is the Secret Avengers, so I mean, you don't get much more secret than fighting on Mars. But by the nature of all the characters, I mean, aside from Cap, you know, you've got Black Widow, Master Spy, Moon Knight, Rooftop Vigilante, Ant-Man, sneaky little bastard who would rather hide in the shadows than fight.
Yeah, I like Ant-Man.
I like Ant-Man too, but what did he accomplish? He accomplished nothing in that story that anybody who isn't just... The Black Panther could have done that, because he's just that cool. He could have snuck away in the shadows or something, never mind shrinking down and sneaking along with their teleport. That could have been accomplished with anybody with invisibility or intangibility or just really good hiding powers.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the, this issue is actually the labeled as the epilogue to the story. So this is the that story not quite over yet, and it deals very specifically and very directly with what the hell with the Nick Fury. And I think perhaps the chief this issue is the issue where Secret Avengers has clicked for me. And that might just be because I was really, really hung up on that Nick Fury that was hanging around with the baddies in the first four issues. Because I was getting really concerned that the Brubaker was going to screw up what Hickman's been doing with the character. And it's resolved in this issue. And it's not even really a spoiler, because you find out like the first half dozen pages. This is an LMD.
That's what we thought.
Yes, we're figuring LMD. But although there is no footnote, I don't know why. It would help if you put one in. I complained about this last week with Birds of Prey. But this does seem to be from an old Nick Fury story where his brother was going by Scorpio and created a new life model and used the Zodiac key to reprogram it with Nick's memories and with an intent to create a replacement Nick Fury. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I can't swear to it, but I'm pretty damn sure that that is from an actual old Nick Fury story. And then this is the story of what happened next to that life model decoy. I mean, that is basically the guts of the story is that it is following the life of the story is called The Secret Life of Max Fury. And the LMD undergoes like psychological, psychiatric care to try and fix it because it believes itself to be Nick Fury. And if it ever remembers that it's not, it has a psychological breakdown and just erases its memory and reminds it and it is Nick Fury over and over again. And it follows its adventures over a period of about 10 years as it breaks out. Goes and shuts down Hydra and AIM operations mercilessly, and then has to be caught by S.H.I.E.L.D. and locked up again.
Oh, God, I need to read this.
Yes, it's rather cool. And then it shows how it was finally captured, shut down, and then... I mean, you know, I'm telling you all of this. This is the story. It's not really much of a spoiler because, you know, once you know it's a life model decoy, you basically know this is the direction the story is going in and how it is taken in by this mysterious organization. They still don't clarify what the hell with the cowboys, but I'm happy about it. And there is a great little last page tweak that actually probably won't mean anything to you, Chris, or to a lot of readers of this, but it's probably a tie-in to Brubaker's Marvels project. Hmm. Actually, no, you didn't read the Marvels project, did you?
No, I missed it.
Okay, well, you know, I'll just drop this spoiler now. So anybody reading Secret Avengers might want to put their fingers in their ear or whatever. If you didn't, well, this won't mean anything to you when you read it. So unless you read the Marvel's project, you know, basically the guy who recovers him, I don't think he's supposed to be the guy that's in charge of this evil organization, but it's John Steele, who was one of America's first super soldiers in World War I.
Hmm.
And literally an old either Atlas or Timely. Comics character who was only in like one comic back in the day and who the Nazis had, the Germans had locked up and they were studying him. And I think the Marvels Project, I'm trying to remember the Marvels Project because you may remember I was a little underwhelmed by the Marvels Project, but now I'm retroactively excited again. The Nazis were studying him to try, and I think Erskine based a lot of his super soldier theory on studying John Steele because Erskine was a German and he defected and went on to help create Captain America. And I believe that he based his theory on Steele. And Steele is with these bad guys. Mm. And I'm just pretty damn intrigued now, I gotta say. This is the issue that has made a lot of this click for me. And
So is the Marvels project, was it released in trade? Have they done a trade?
Yes, it's been released in trade at this point. I think it'll probably read a little better in trade than it did in individual issues, too.
Maybe I need to check that out.
I would say, yeah. I think it dipped in the middle, but it had kind of like that Torch miniseries from before. It had a pretty strong ending after dipping in the middle. And but it's got Epting art, and it's Brubaker. So although I know Brian is probably recoiling in horror at that.
Yeah.
Oh, we've lost Brian, obviously, or he would have commented.
I guess so.
So Secret Avengers. Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. Definitely. This is the one where the series has really clicked for me. Now, whether or not it can carry on this momentum through to the next issue, we'll have to wait and see. But, maybe not send Moon Knight into space this time. And it might make some sense.
Yeah, send Punisher into space next time. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
You know? Or at least as much, right?
Yeah.
Then the other one this week is Avengers Academy. Now, of course, this is the third Avengers book out in 1 week, in a month when there are 5 Wednesdays.
God, that's crazy.
Guys, come on. But it's Avengers Academy, so I'm willing to excuse it. And this is the issue that's been narrated by Metal, which is, as you may recall, the one I've been waiting for a while. I don't know that it lives up quite to my expectation of an issue with Metal's narration, because it is much like the Hazmat issue last time. Actually, it is very much more plot, slightly more plot driven than say the second issue with what's the character's name, Finesse, with Finesse's narration, where it was all about seeing inside her head as she went about her wicked, wicked ways. But this picks up from the cliffhanger of last issue, where Veil, Hazmat, and Metal corner Norman Osborn in his cell after orchestrating a power outage at the raft, and things don't quite go the way you would expect. I don't want to say too much about this because I really encourage everybody to read Avengers Academy, but these characters are really a lot more ready to kill Norman Osborn than you would have thought. And this is the great strength of Avengers Academy, is that if you're going to do a series about characters who could potentially turn to the dark side, which is the whole thrust of Avengers Academy, is that there's the potential, you do have to genuinely make that a question. You know, because, I mean, out of the gate, it was like, yeah, that's what they think, but whatever, you know. And mostly from the first issue, these seem like decent people. But as it's gone on, Finesse in particular, and Metal really surprised me in this issue. We'd quickly, you know, as I say, I latched onto Metal very quickly. I saw a lot of Ben Grimm in him, but this is like if Ben Grimm didn't have the Fantastic Four. Metal was taken away, you know. I mean, the first few pages are Metal's origin. It turns out he was a Hawaiian surfboarder who wiped out one day, and when they dragged him out of the ocean, half the skin in his face had fallen off, and there was the red Metal skull underneath. Mm. And that he was taken away by Hammer and studied. And when he came out of it after the came out of the anesthesia after the study, all of his skin had been torn off by them, and he was just what he is now, this red Metal skeleton man. And
so he always had the power. It's just that, like, his skin was covering.
Yeah, but obviously, I think it was his mutation was kicking in. You know.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
But no. I'm just, you know, the character, he seemed kind of, he had a great, he seemed like he had a really great acceptance of his situation. Not that he was happy about it, but that he understood what it meant, and he understood the limitations it had placed on him, and that he needed to work to be able to understand it. So, you know, it's really the flip side of it with this one. He is the first one to go in there and wrap his throat around Norman Osborn, wrap his hand around Norman's throat, and he's really ready to do it. Until Norman comes out with a counteroffer, and Metal's—he's very much in touch with his situation, and not in a good way. And it is good stuff, honestly. And then, you know, the prison break kind of gets out of control, and it involves Tigra, Speedball, Justice, and Hank Pym getting in there and kicking a bit of ass. And, you know, taking all the time as well to drop just the little hints here and there. It's like when Justice leans over and looks at Speedball and says, "You're bleeding." "Oh, that's just a scratch," you know, because we know Speedball's cutting himself after last issue. The little bits worked out. And Luke Cage says, "Sweet Christmas." I don't remember the last time Luke Cage actually said, "Sweet Christmas."
Yeah.
I remember, you know, I didn't know Luke Cage when this actually, funny enough coincidence, going back to Pascal Ferry on Thor, Heroes for Hire. Heroes for Hire in the late 90s by John Ostrander was my introduction to Luke Cage. And he'd actually turned down Iron Fist's offer to join Heroes for Hire in the early part of that series. And the villains of that early story, the UFOs, attacked him in the the used movie theater that he used to live in, because that's where Luke Cage used to live. And he was Sweet Christmas in it and whatever. And Ironclad, one of the UFOs, asked him, "Why don't you swear for real?" And he said, "Grandmama didn't like it." That was my biggest use to Luke Cage. So it's always sat at odds with my original introduction to the character when Bendis has him swear like a docker. which doesn't really come across in the mainstream books, obviously, because they bleep over it. But particularly that Max Cage series, I forget who wrote that, but yeah, it always sat odds on me. But there's this great line here. You know, what does he say? You know, "You want to kill Osborne? Get in line. Ain't no excuse for being stupid." And he rages and rages and rages. "He put a bomb in my heart. Came after my wife. You see me tearing off his cell door? You've got to be the dumbest mother loving." "Pim, take over here before I start cursing for real." And that's my Luke Cage. That's the Luke Cage I met first. So even that, even this isn't Luke Cage's book, and it's like so. But Cage on Cage usually does wind up well. Christos Cage on Luke Cage usually does wind up well. And you know, then Metal closes out the issue with more narration, and you know, I'm seeing this character in a whole different way that I never thought that he was. You know, of the characters who seem to have the potential to go wrong, I never thought it'd be him. And then that's just the mark of the quality of the book, is that it does hit you with these things. Metal did not seem like that guy to me. I immediately, as I say, I latched on to him pretty quick, and I'm glad to see that the investment I put into him is paying off in these surprising turns. Yeah. And I also read Ultimate Mystery this week, but I really don't have anything to say about it. It's still fine. There's a nice twist at the end of that issue, too, but I don't have much else to say about that. So that's me.
Well, cool. There you go. So, that is going to leave us with the Flash.
We lose Kilby.
Yeah, he had a thing, so he may be back.
He's missing the Flash.
You know, he loves the Flash. And he didn't even want to.
I know.
So, McFeeler, why don't you kind of run us through this and.
Okay, where are we at? Well, picking up from where we left off last issue, the future version of the Top has informed the Flash of what is going to happen. The reason that the Renegades have come back in time to arrest him, which will result... When the rogues of the present day break the mirror left behind by the original Mirror Master, it will supposedly free these entities called the Mirror Lords, one of whom who will possess Iris, ultimately leading to the catastrophe that will have the Flash... arrested for murder.
She'll become one of his greatest villains, the Mirror Mistress. Hell yeah.
Well, okay, yeah. I'm going to talk about that, but we'll have to get through the rest of this to get
is,
there.
This issue is essentially everybody fights over the mirror. And Captain Boomerang gets back into the mix after appearing at the end of the previous issue. And we get a little Brightest Day tie-in. It just kind of goes to show you how late this issue of Flash is, for starters. We get Captain Boomerang experiencing his Brightest Day vision from a month and a half ago.
Yeah, he had a White Lantern moment, what I like to call it.
Yes.
Well, they're all still sort of doing that, though. I mean, that's happening in all the Brightest Day issues, essentially.
Yes, but it all happened in the same month that issue actually came out. This is the straggler.
I think that this is sort of continually happening to these characters.
I get the impression that this is the first time this has happened to Boomerang.
Didn't they all kind of like all have it at the same time? Yeah, and then they just kept, they remembered it. They keep getting flashes of it.
Well, yeah. Max Lord has done that two or three times, though.
Yeah, but he's just remembering it. I don't think he's not having the one flash. I mean, they
well
had it at once.
The only reason I'm saying like this may be a secondary is because of the one line where it says you have other things to do, so it seems to indicate that he's not on track. But I may be wrong. So
yeah, I got that as like you shouldn't be like here messing around with the rogues. You have literally have other things you should be doing. You know, you shouldn't be getting back into the mix with the rogues. You should be doing what you were brought back to do. Is what I saw that as.
One way or another, this issue is damn late.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but anyway, that's.
So is Brian Kilby. There he is.
Hey. Hey.
Sorry.
He's just in time, actually. So.
Hey, welcome. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, then this issue is basically just a large scale fight over the mirror until it turns out that things may not be what they seem.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps they aren't.
So what do we think about the issue? Not about
being well, I liked it. I mean, Flash.
Yeah, it was okay.
Maybe we shouldn't have saved this one to the end because
we can't. I don't think we can fully talk about it unless we kind of spoil it.
Yeah, unless we want to spoil it.
We're gonna.
You know, if you don't want spoilers for Flash, that's Fanboy Versus this week. Tune in next time.
But I'm sure everybody has read this because if they haven't, then what
the left with you? Nobody loves us.
Yeah. So apparently
the twist is the top sends Flash crashing through the mirror. And actually, this isn't even spoilers. This is interesting. I don't know if you guys looked closely at this page where he's falling through the spiral of mirror, and there are these shards of mirror flying around him with images of his mother in them. Those are drawn by Andy Kubert. He's not credited, but I recognize an Andy Kubert drawing anywhere. These are glimpses of Flashpoint from next year.
Oh.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Because I just know he's. I think it's Andy Kubert's drawing that with Geoff Johns next year. So this is part of that. You mark me. Because remember, we had Andy Kubert draw Professor Zoom's moment in Brightest Day number 0 as well.
Was it Andy or is it Adam?
I'm pretty sure it's Andy. Because
Adam's the good one. Andy's the.
Well, I don't know.
I can't keep him tracking.
Andy's not bad, but Adam's the one who's actually dependable, who can actually get a book out.
One actually can keep a book out, and one does a book, and then 6 months later does another book.
Yeah, I really like Andy Hubert. I mean, like his stuff on Captain America was good, but but I mean, he just can't keep a book going.
He did Morrison's Batman and Son, but has he done anything since? I mean, maybe he's been working on this. This art seems to be ready. So, yeah, well, I mean, there's some foreshadowing built into that, for starters, so we got that coming up. But then it turns out that this is actually just a bit of a... it's some kind of... What is it? A slow-working poison. Don't quite get the full extent of what of what the mirror is. Maybe that'll follow up in a future part of the story. But basically, all that Mirror Lord stuff was Bull Dink, and the top seems to be the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Iris has found evidence that'll help to prove something along those lines of some kind. And the top has confronted her and demands the evidence over her body, over her dead body. And the Flash has twigged to this immediately that the top has lied to him. But unfortunately, he gets ganked off to the future, where I was half expecting to see Professor Zoom, frankly, sitting in the judge's chair.
Yeah, I was expecting somebody in the judge's chair that we would just be like, oh my god.
That would have been fantastic. I wish they had gone that direction.
Yeah, but that's still a cool looking page, though.
Professor Zoom story coming up, so...
It's still an awesome looking page there. Mary Ellen, you are on trial for murder.
I know most of them, like the Mark Waid stuff, except for like the Speed Force is like all but ignored, but I would love them to go back to, what was it, the 25th Century Flash? Or is it 26th?
That was like the 275th Century.
No. His first run, early, there's the one that came back and fell in love with Linda.
What was his name? I can't remember.
I think he was from the 25th or 26th century.
Well, this is the 25th century that the ropes are from. The 25th century is a big part of Flash lore, because that's where Professor Zoom is from.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where...
I think that other... I don't know, I haven't read it, honestly, so I can't comment. So I'm just going to...
There are lots of Flashes from all sorts across all across the time stream, but the one that I really liked was one that Mark Waid introduced, and he came back, he took...
Take the Flash's place for some reason.
When Wally got lost in the Speed Force.
Yeah, Wally was lost and somebody needed to protect Central.
Yeah, and he came back and he was just sort of, almost scamming them. And he fell in love with Linda. It was just fun.
And he realized he had to leave, right? And how it ended?
I think
I'll be a man. I got to leave.
I think Wally came back and chased him off or something.
So I don't know, something like that.
So, Are we to assume that we can't trust anything the top has told us, like this whole mirror mistress thing? And
yeah, I'm assuming it's all bunk.
Well, yeah, there's something bad about that mirror. I mean, obviously, there's something that's going to happen.
But wasn't there a separate conversation that Top had with one of the other?
The other renegades may actually be under the impression that all this is going to happen, and the Top's been manipulating them. That's my thought.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking, that, you know, he's the one who's framed the Flash. They're all under the impression that the Flash really is guilty of doing this. Mm. And I mean, that's what it looks like to me.
27th century Wikipedia says.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I really dug that Flash. He was awesome.
That's John Fox was the name of the person.
Yes. Yeah, that's yes. Right. Yeah. Sweet.
Not familiar with him.
That was a fun story. That was early on, like in Mark Waid's run.
Further in the future than that, but that was based on fuzzy memories of reading about him in a small inset box in an encyclopedia. So,
yeah. Very good.
Yeah, I think that's
so, Flash.
Yeah.
Still a great, you know, still so much better than I think we had any right to really expect it to be after all the controversy that surrounded bringing the character back.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree.
It's whimsical without being devoid of substance.
Yeah, and after
without being disposable.
After Marv Wolfman rewrote Crisis for the novelization, to feature more on Barry and to point out that, hey, Barry's not dead. He's literally in the Speed Force. So we obviously knew he wasn't dead. He was in the Speed Force. I feel better about Barry being alive and kicking in the DC universe, but so Jeff Johns actually writing a really enjoyable book has, I guess, satisfied all of my quibbles that I had with that. So way
it's
to go,
really
Jeff Johns.
Review with this book, you know. I mean, I had a customer. He was I forget exactly. He was put on to Flash by somebody, and he ordered a back copy of the first issue of this. Bought it, read it, came in the next day, and it was right. Get me the rest of that and put me down for it from now on.
Nice.
So, you know, it's really hard to argue with what this book is doing. No Flash facts this issue, though.
I did notice that. I was going to comment on that. Yeah, we've the no Flash facts. I wonder if what that was. I guess it was so late.
Yeah.
How late was this, by the way?
It was hell late.
A month?
Yeah, it felt really, really late.
There is a drawing of Chloe in DC Comics form at the end of this issue in the DC Nation thing.
Nation things.
Oh, is
so
that?
I guess that's apparently going to happen. She's actually going to show up. Who'd have thunk?
They should bring Pete Ross. They should make Pete Ross black.
Yes, they should.
Yeah, that's what they should do.
Yeah, he's going to be in. She's going to appear in the Jimmy Olsen backups that are starting in Action Comics soon. And we will all be getting a sampler of that because Secret Six is having a crossover with Action Comics in December.
Ooh,
you so all will be all will be doing it. I mean,
Action Comics.
Sorry.
Well, there you go. That's it. That's the show.
Hey, but for next week, everyone needs to watch Superman, Batman, Apocalypse.
Yes, we're going to be talking about that next week.
Some of us have seen it.
Well, you listeners have to get it too, so that you can understand when we rip the arse out of it. Oh, yeah, not to give you a spoiler brief or anything.
Let's just tell everybody, just run out and buy it, because we want DC to keep making these.
Yes, absolutely.
I like it.
Yes.
And that's the best
children.
Way. Yes, vote with the dollar.
Vote with your dollar, yeah. So. Or your pound.
Or right, or
your quid, or whatever,
your euro, whatever it is you socialists do. I'm kidding, that was a joke. I love you all. Anyway, yes, go to the website tfradio.net. There you're going to find all the shows that we do. Also, again, we do record this show live. That's going to be at. I don't know. Give us the
tfradio.net. tfradio.net/live.
/live.
Well, thank you to everybody who's tuned in this week as well, because I think that's the biggest number of listeners we've had for this show live.
Yes.
For this show, yeah.
Really nice.
For this show, yeah. I know this isn't your big fancy.
I really like it when we have big events, when we have like 2,000 or 3,000 people, but that's only happened like twice, so. It's usually, right. Usually you max out at like 75 or 80 people, so.
Right.
Yeah.
2,000?
Yeah.
Oh, one of them just disappeared while I was saying.
Maybe, maybe we should like auction off like a Rodimus minor figure. Maybe that would increase our
Hey, JD, do you want to mention the voicemail line?
Yes, thank you. So, we have set up a voicemail line for the shows.
I did it like a year ago. Okay. I just never used it.
Sorry. Yeah. But, I mean, so the idea is that if you have questions or comments or suggestions or, you know, and have the possibility that we can play that back on the show.
Or not.
Or not, whatever. I mean, if you don't want or if it doesn't sound good, then we won't. But
or if you don't do it. Sorry,
right,
no, shut
we
up.
We just don't do that. So basically, we set something up for nothing. Thanks, Brian. Okay. So,
the Fanboy versus Fan page. Send us your letters in digital form.
Yes.
Mark them
yes.
Okay to repeat.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You'll definitely win a no prize. Definitely win a no prize. If you spot an error, which you will spot several per show,
several.
You will win not a thing. Not even an empty envelope, nor an empty email.
Yep. Yeah. Chris said Jeff Johns, not Jeff Loeb. There's a free one.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So, JD, go ahead.
The next explanation to win a no prize.
JD's lost control.
I'm
sorry.
No, it's okay. So the phone number is 1-931-99-GOBOT.
Yes. 931-99-GOBOT. That's for the whole website, so and all our shows and content.
All the shows, everything. And what does that work out to in numbers?
It doesn't matter. It's 931-99-GOBOT.
99GOBOT. Okay.
99GOBOT.
Okay.
So hopefully you can spell. So there you go.
I have no idea what to tell the international listeners about.
It's plus 1-931-99GOBOT.
Yeah. It's very important to get the plus in there, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, but, you know, please, you know, leave us comment, feedback, you know, whatever. And that's just, it's just another way for all of you to get in touch with all of us.
Let us know you love us.
Yes.
Please.
We don't want to know if you hate us. We already know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, just leave that out. Like.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, but that could be entertaining, too. We could play, like, hate mail each week. That would be exciting.
That would be awesome.
Anyway. Okay. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. And that's it. So please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010 Radio Free Cybertron.